powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
Hey guys, as a reminder, you can subscribe to our show in case you miss any of it. The Bump and Stacy podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever. Tune in. You subscribe to the Bump and Stacy podcast. Downloads automatically to your phone. If you don't want it downloaded, you can always pause those. But that way, if you miss any interview, any segment, any game, anything that we have, you can listen to it later and catch up with the, I don't know, the best in Seattle sports. I was just kind of spitballing, and then it kind of happened.
You right.
I said it.
Nothing
I said
less
it,
than
and
the
what?
Best.
Nothing less than the best. All right, the success of this year's Seahawks rests with one group of players. Granted, it's a big group of players. Here's how we got to this conversation. Pete Carroll mentioned that we'd be seeing some of the starters play a bit in this game, and Curtis, you brought up, hey, would either you, Bump, or you, Stacy, would it change your mind about this team, about the outlook of this team, if any of the starters played? Or if the starters looked a certain way, right?
Yeah, I posed that question. I think it was something like, hey, is there anything the starters can do on, what is it, Friday this week?
Yes,
Friday. Can change your mind about how you felt coming out of Thursday.
So, Bump, tell me if you agree or disagree with me.
Okay.
Nothing the starters do will change my mind. Nothing the starters do will change how I feel about the Seahawks because they've already shown me enough. DK is a superstar. I know that because I've seen it. Tyler Lockett is a model of consistency. We know that because he's finished with 1,000 yards in each of the last three seasons, despite struggles elsewhere on the team. Quandre Diggs is your best defensive player right now, has led your team in interceptions for the last two seasons. What catches up with any team is depth. So when I say the success of this year's Seahawks rests with one group of players, it's specifically the young players. Nothing the starters do will change my mind. I already know that so many of those guys are great. What I still need to see is young players take a step forward. That's what I still need to see. It's not going to happen in week three of the preseason. It's going to have to happen over the course of the season. But that's the only thing changing my mind on the outlook of this team.
I think something can happen that will change your mind a little bit.
Okay.
Seeing Geno connect with these starters in the past game, because we just haven't seen that. And what has been kind of the thing that Pete Carroll's leaning on is like, look, Geno hasn't had a lot of help. He's playing with these young guys. In so many words, he's saying, wait till our guys get out there. He's going to look big better. So I think that could help change your view a little bit. But you're right. It's going to fall on these rookie tackles who we think are going to play. It's going to fall on presumably a rookie corner or two who need to change the perception of this pass defense because they gave up a bunch of yards last year.
Yep.
It's going to fall on maybe a Boye Mafe helping out on the other side and producing more sacks. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's gone. You're going to have to lean on the depth because we know the profile of Jamal, Quandre, JB, all these guys who have these stats to back up who they are. Yeah, these young guys are going to have to step up and elevate this team. Now, that's a lot of pressure to put on some rookies, but this is the business. This is why you're drafted so high. You know, that's why you were the number nine pick. That's why you're the Jim Thorpe Award winner and Kobe Bryant. And you have higher expectations than a guy who's a free agent or are drafted late. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I would just say that seeing Geno connect with the starters could give you a bit more confidence in that situation.
And Geno himself.
And Geno himself, yeah.
I see that. I see that. I guess I had almost excluded the quarterbacks from this, but I kind of was like the same thing. I have my mind made up about kind of who they are as players. It's just not nearly as positive as it is for DK or Jamal or Quandre. But I see what you're saying in that maybe my perception of how great I think the offense will be will change depending on the connection between those guys. I think I just think of like what makes for a Super Bowl team. The best teams in football usually have the most stars, right? Yeah. Like the teams that have the most talent are usually the best. But the depth always matters. It's an overlooked part of every team. It's the guys that become stars and become big free agent targets and become fantasy stalwarts because you know less about them and they sneak up on you, right?
Yeah.
So with San Francisco, everyone already knew about Nick Bosa and everyone already knew about George Kittle, or now they know about Debo. But then you get like this stable of running backs they have where no one could tell you like, hey, where'd Jeff Wilson go to college?
Right.
right? Or like, you know, name me like all their running backs. They'd be like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. They have been a huge part of their success, a huge part. So it's those kinds of guys that I'm looking at for Seattle, where it's like no one outside of Seattle needs to know who Travis Homer and DJ Dallas are. But if those two guys can have, especially Dallas, the kind of preseason he's had, but in the regular season, that makes a huge difference in the success of the Seahawks season. Likewise, a lot of people around the country aren't going to know who as much about Kobe Bryant, especially when he was playing opposite the number four overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can be great for you, that makes a huge impact in your season.
It's always nice to get production in places that you're not relying on.
Yeah.
As you look at the stats from last year, obviously Russell Wilson was the leading passer of the team. You got Rashad Penny, leading rusher. Tyler Lockett, leading receiver. Jordan Brooks, leading tackler. Quandre Diggs, leader when it comes to interceptions. All right, who are those guys? Where are you going to get another 400 yards at receiving?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to get another two or three interceptions?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to get it from a starter, but also be nice to get it from a guy who could be a starter, but is a young guy, and you just don't have high expectations for that. That's what great teams do. You look at all the great teams across all the sports, right? It's your starters, and then those guys need breaks. They're not machines. They're not going to be out there every single snap. So when you do need a break, when you do sub one of these starters out, what's the backup going to do? Is he going to be a liability, or is he going to be an addition? Is he going to help this team out? So yeah, I'm with you when it comes to that. The better teams have great leadership, and they are deep. And then these same guys are going to have to make plays on special teams. That is field position. You can't have 30, 40-yard kickoff returns every time. Can't have a 15-yard punt return every time.
Yep.
So you're going to lean on those guys there. So, yes, I am completely with you when it comes to looking at the depth and seeing which one of these young guys are going to contribute.
Well, and if you had a great defensive line with a ton of proven starters, you could afford weaknesses elsewhere. For instance, the Rams linebacker group last year was not exceptionally great. I mean, it was the weakest part of a really good defense. They ended up having a little bit of a drop-off in corner play from the year prior to that in 2020, but even relative to where they were. However, it didn't end up mattering because other parts of the team were so exceptional as entire position groups. With Seattle, if the defensive line can become exceptional as a position group, and I'll include actually the outside linebackers in there, or if one or two of those guys, let's say Uchenna Nwosu and Daryl Taylor, can be an amazing tandem, suddenly the weak links that you have on your defense don't matter. If you can't have outstanding players elsewhere, then those weak links are going to be exploited. Because you know who watches a lot of tape? Opposing teams.
Right.
Opposing quarterbacks. They're going to be watching it, and they're going to be saying, who's your corner that gives up a million yards? That's who I'm going after.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be as good as you want up front, but if you are not exceptional, that quarterback will inevitably find that guy. And that's what I worry about with this team.
Yeah, you always need a group to lead the charge. For 10 years, you say, I can rely on the quarterback position. He's gonna win some games for us by himself. Just him being special. When you look at these position groups, I think the one group that I would say is exceptional would be the wide receivers,
mm-hmm.
but they depend on the quarterback who depends on this line. And then you look at the back end, the safety spots. You can say they're exceptional, but they're the last line of defense. You need stuff in front of them to happen to help them out.
Yeah, you kind of want the exceptional pieces to be not literally on offense, but able to attack more. Like, you want them to be able to set the pace of the game.
Yeah.
Whether it be like an exceptional running back, an exceptional edge rusher, an exceptional corner. You're right. That's a really good point.
Yeah, the guys in the box control the pace and the flow of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The linebackers, the D-line, the O-line, the running backs, the quarterbacks. The guys on the outside make the bigger plays, the more explosive plays, but a lot of it is contingent on what's going on inside that box. So if you do have, like you mentioned, tandem edge rushers getting after the quarterback, everyone else looks better. If you have an offensive line and a running back who can set the tone and run the football and block, everybody looks better. Geno looks better. Drew Lock looks better. And that's why I love football, because one man is not going to win a game for
mm-hmm.
you. It just doesn't happen that way. Even with all the stuff that Russell Wilson used to do, someone still had to catch the rock. Someone still had to finish the play. So, yes, you need a group that is exceptional. If you had to, so I pick the receivers as probably the group that stands out the most to me right now. If you had to pick a group that stands out to you the most right now, who you think
is most exceptional?
Most exceptional.
I mean, I would also go receiver. It's the same thing. I would go receivers and I would go safeties. And almost it's more to do with Quandre than it is to do with Jamal, which is probably a shame. You'd like for it to be reversed or for both of them to be making that case. I mean, I think if Rashad Penny can look like Rashad Penny from last year, that completely. Okay, I actually I don't take back what I said. But if there is a starter that will change my mind, it is Rashad Penny.
Mm-hmm.
If Rashad Penny can start the season looking good and can actually stay on the field, that will change my mind.
Okay. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you because Rashad Penny himself can control the game.
Yeah.
You put the ball in his hand, you go. There's less dependency on other positions. Now, you got to get the line to block. I get it. But when you have the ball in your hand right now, you can make something out of nothing. Not comparing him to Barry Sanders, but we saw Barry do that his whole career, right? Just, I don't care how bad this offensive line is. I'm special. I'm going to make it do what it do. So, yeah, I like the fact that if Penny can get going, then this offense becomes exceptional, I believe.
From the 206 on the Mac and Jacks text line, this is a 2-5 win team max. This roster is a bad roster. This is what I think about the roster, and this is why Thursday was so disappointing. This roster is a roster full of potential with a lot of question marks.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, in my mind, that Seattle is trying to do is build the foundation, then find the quarterback so that you have a lot of pieces of the foundation that you can pay or extend or take advantage of while your quarterback is on a rookie deal, because the quarterback's the most expensive position. So it's just financially the most flexibility is to do that. If you don't have the foundation, suddenly you feel like you took a step even further back. It's already hard enough to find the quarterback. At least finding the quarterback when you've got the foundation, right? That's what everyone was looking at Denver for. That's why everyone's so excited about Denver, because they felt like they had all the pieces. They just didn't have the quarterback. And that's why their offseason is drastically changed in terms of people's outlook. People are talking about them competing for a Super Bowl after they haven't made the playoffs for 5 or 6 years. In Seattle, Thursday felt disappointing because Geno wasn't the worst player on the field. If Geno was the worst player on the field and I felt like everyone around him was still contributing, it's frustrating, but Geno's not your long-term answer. So I'm like, you know what? That's okay. So in terms of seeing the roster as a bad roster, we don't know yet is what I'm saying. That was a very long, drawn-out way of saying we don't know yet, but I think it will drastically shape where this team is in a rebuild, and we'll find out a couple weeks into the season.
I don't see this roster as a bad roster. I see this roster
unproven
and without a lot of experience. You have on defense, if you look on defense, you have three guys who are Pro Bowler type dudes: Jordan Brooks, Quandre, and Jamal. Mm-hmm. You look on offense, you got at least two guys who are Pro Bowl caliber: DK and Lockett. So you can't look at the roster and say, this is just a horrible roster. You don't have 5 to 6 potential Pro Bowlers on a horrible roster. I think that because we just haven't seen enough out of these guys, and you're depending on these young guys, like you mentioned, you're like, I don't know. And it's okay to feel that way. You probably should feel that way because you like to lean on what you know to be true. And we don't know if Boye Mafe is going to be a guy. We don't know if Daryl Taylor can take another step yet. We think they can, but they still have to go out and prove it. So I think by week 4 or 5, I think we'll have a really good idea of what this team can truly be.
Question. Which unproven guy or guys, it could be one on offense, one on defense, maybe both on defense, whatever, makes you feel like, I think this is a roster with a lot of potential rather than a roster that's devoid of talent?
Which guy makes me feel like there's potential? And I'm not just saying this because he's a cool Gabe Lucas. I think because people weren't expecting a lot out of him, and we know just how important that offensive line is. Now, I think Charles Cross is going to be fine. I think he'll be good to go. You're drafting number 9 for a reason. But you need guys like an Abe Lucas to pop and to perform at a level that you're not supposed to. Defensively, the guy who makes me feel that way is Kobe Bryant, honestly, because I think that a spot that's been in question over the past few years has been that nickel spot. Mm-hmm. And I think moving Kobe to that nickel allows you to bring Trey back on the outside without having to compete too much. We'll see what Sidney Jones does on that side. But moving him inside allows you to put some veterans on the outside that you trust a bit more. We know Pete Carroll is all about that trust and allow you just to play free. So, again, it's the young guys. It's the young guys. We're going to have to pop one on offense, one on defense.
All right. This hour, Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to 4 Down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Now, normally you wouldn't say this in a football game, but I personally cannot wait to get to third down. First down, is there any chance Drew Lock can win the starting job this Friday? What does he need to do?
The game is on Friday, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Even better. Mo better. Can he do anything? He has to play amazing. Second week in a row, I'm going to say he has to go off, man. He has to be able to handle the pressure at the line of scrimmage. Shift that protection. Not lean on Austin Blythe every single time to get him in the right spot. He's got to be able, you know what? He's got to make mature decisions with the football. Mature decision to me will be rolling outside, having nothing there, throwing the football out of bounds and getting the second or third down. And then he has to be able to make a couple plays that Geno did make and didn't make last weekend. That 41-yard bomb to Penny Hart, he needs one of those. That throw up the seam that Jacob Eason had to Kobe Parkinson, he needs one of those. He's got to put together some drives and look in complete control. And then he's got to get in the huddle and look at the guys and have them believe in him. He's got to get in that on that one knee like Russell Wilson used to do and look up at the guys and make them believe, all right, guys, we're going to go down and we're going to drive and win this football game.
And not just to an invisible huddle.
Not just to an invisible real guys.
Just real humans that are there.
Real bodies around there. So there are some things he can do to help himself out. But like we mentioned earlier, we've listened to Pete Carroll talk about Geno, and he's got a little crush on Geno. Mm-hmm. He believes in Geno. He trusts Geno. Relationships are all about trust. Now, Geno might not perform at a level that you like, but he trusts Geno. So Drew's got to get that trust, get that swag, and make some throws, young man. Let's go.
Can I tell you my other theory? That that maybe part of this is also for a guy like Drew who has been given that belief before, wanting him to earn it rather than outwardly be like, co-signing on Drew. Drew's the guy. Drew's the man. Drew can do it. To want him to have to earn it.
Yeah.
Another aspect.
My receiver coach at Washington State used to say, man, you ain't got no money in the bank. You know, you put no deposits in. Say what you want. Geno has made some deposits into his Pete Carroll account. Drew has not made any deposits, made a withdrawal or two last week. He's in the negative. So he needs to put some deposits in there, get some money in the bank, and get Pete to believe.
All right, second down. Bump, you have taken an extreme interest in another team, an AFC team. That team, for some reason, is the Jets. Please tell us why you have taken an extreme interest in the Jets.
I'll tell you why. One, I love Elijah Moore. Great receiver. I really like that guy, but that's not the reason. All right, I'm taking extreme interest because there are two guys who were drafted the year that I was in the league, first in the league, on that team. Sounds like Joe Flacco's going to get a start and Dwayne Brown's going to be on that line of scrimmage. So there's only seven guys left in this league from the 2008 draft. So just like I told
you, 80s baby.
80s baby, stand up. So I'm riding in the car with my son the other day, and I play a song that's like 3 years old. He goes, Dad, that song is so old. I'm like, it's not old.
That's
rude. You're just young, okay? I go, once you get my age, all the stuff you listen to are going to be from back in the day when you were around this age. That's how I look at Dwayne Brown and Joe Flacco. I go back. I'm like, man, Joe Flacco, Super Bowl days. Dwayne Brown, been in the league forever. I just like seeing the old head survive in this young man's game. Seven dudes left in the league from the 2008 draft. That's why I'm excited about the Jets. I just want to see him do some.
Third down. Bump, why is Hooters your favorite restaurant now?
Now, bear with me. Jennifer Bumpus, she's on a hike, so she can't get at me right now. All you people listening, I will tell you one thing. I went to Hooters once in Coeur d'Alene. It was the most awkward experience of my life because, it is what it is.
You thought you were going into a library.
You know, and then
just all of a sudden it's a Hooters.
And then we're there. But this is why I'm feeling Hooters right now. They're giving NIL deals to offensive linemen. The most least attractive position in football. When you're young, you got to force kids to go play offensive linemen. And these guys need some love. They should get some love. They protect the quarterback. They protect the most delicate position in football, and they do not get enough love. So the fact that that Hooters is showing them some love, I appreciate that. And I'll tell you one thing. In college, offensive linemen got all the girls, man. The girls love some offensive linemen because they're big, they'll protect you. I don't know what it was, but our old linemen got all the girls. They deserve more love. Thank you, Hooters, for hooking our guys up. They protect the quarterback, get the run game going. Hooters is my favorite restaurant, but you will not catch me in one. I'll
now,
tell you that.
A question I have, only because it's offensive linemen, are the NIL deals being paid in wings?
I'm sure that's part of the deal.
You know what I mean?
You got to feed those dudes.
Hey, that's all I'm saying.
Once a week.
Bleacher Report released an article today listing one player a team should release before the start of the season. Who is it for Seattle, and why should this writer be on the hot seat for that choice?
This writer's tripping right now. This sounds like a writer who doesn't really pay attention to Seattle. You look at a couple stats, you see who was drafted, and you say, all right, well, they should probably get rid of this guy because he hasn't been healthy over the past 4 years. They're talking about Rashad Penny. Like, if you're talking about cutting Rashad Penny, that tells me that you're not doing your research. That was lazy. That was a lazy article right there. I didn't read everyone else's cuts or players that should be cut on other teams because, obviously, we talk about the Seahawks here. But I'm scrolling down, and I'm like, okay, who are they going to pick? This got to be, like, a number two or three that they think they should cut. They said Rashad Penny. You're absolutely wrong. Rashad Penny should get every opportunity to be successful this year, and I think that he is going to get that. That, to me, is what Rodgers will call. I don't know where Bleacher Report is. It's, you know what it is.
Oh.
I can't say it like him, but you know what that is to me.
Yeah, Curtis, is it Basura?
Basura.
Yeah, yes. That's what it is. All right, we have two amazing guests joining us today. Obviously, Jason Churchill. I've been mentioning him coming up at 1. But before Jason, Lofa Tatupu going to join us at noon. I am very eager to ask Lofa about the defense. I don't want to touch too much on Thursday, but I am curious about kind of like his feelings about the team, his feelings about the outlook for the season. I know there are some people that are like, I don't care, it's a preseason game. And then I know that there are people that are saying, I'm panicking. I know it's preseason, but I'm panicking. So very curious to hear from Lofa. Before then, though, ESPN's Mina Kimes is going to join us. We're going to ask her about the Seattle Seahawks. We'll take a little bit of a temperature check on the rest of the NFC West. I know she's doing some work with the Rams. We won't hold it against her. But I also want to take a look at the rest of the league. And I'm wondering if she's heard the theory on Tom Brady, because he's back at camp now. So we'll ask her about all of that. It's coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, joining us here in just one moment, ESPN's Mina Kimes going to come on to talk a little bit of Seahawks and look ahead for a little bit of an NFL preview. We are heading into the final week of the preseason. A game between the Falcons and Jets will wrap up preseason week 2. The Seahawks have their final preseason game on Friday at Dallas, that one on the road, before they come back home for a week 1 primetime game against the Denver Broncos. So let's start there. ESPN's Mina Kimes joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Mina, I know that we're still talking preseason and we are in the thick of things here in August, but I cannot stop talking about week 1. It's Russell Wilson back in Seattle. I'm assuming all of your colleagues know you're a Seahawks fan. How often do they ask you about this game?
Well, you know, we have it on ESPN, so we're going to be talking about it a lot. And I'm just setting the expectations pretty low, to be honest.
It's just going to hurt. It's just going to be painful.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Is it a revenge game? Are we calling it that? A reunion game?
You know, here's what's tough about a revenge game is, like, I feel like the narrative, there's a lot of different narratives about, was it Russell Wilson that wanted out? Was it Pete and John that sent him away? I feel like because it feels like the dissolution of a marriage, that, like, the two sides just, I don't know, couldn't find a way to work together. It doesn't feel like a revenge game for Wilson, although I'm sure for him he's thinking, you as an organization should have chosen me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you have a list of teams that a quarterback would consider as trade destinations, right, it's hard not to pin some of the, motivation for the split on him. But, you know, either way, I think it's going to be obviously a very significant test for the Seattle defense. And I'm actually just really excited to see what Russell Wilson looks like in a different offense.
Mina, I kind of feel like that ex who's not letting go. Like, I check up on Russell Wilson all the time, look at his Instagram, see what's going on over there in Denver. What are your expectations for Russell over there in Denver? And then what are your expectations for the quarterback situation here in Seattle?
Well, as far as Russ goes, I expect it to look the same. I kind of laugh seeing all these articles. Oh, he's given control of the offense and it's going to look different and this and that. This is not to disparage Russell Wilson. I think he's an amazing quarterback, and I think it's obviously a huge upgrade for Denver. But candidly, I just think, you know, he kind of does what he does. I think it's going to be a pretty similar offense to what we saw in Seattle, in part, by the way, because I think The skill players in the offensive line, the run game, actually not too dissimilar from what we saw a lot of with Russ in Seattle. It's an okay offensive line with, I think, a good running game and a couple of really nice wide receivers in Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. You can almost even like draw an analog to Metcalf and Lockett, although they're different players, and I think Metcalf and Lockett are better. But, yeah, I expect to see, you know, him making plays, throwing the ball deep, you know, not so much thrown over the middle of the field in the short intermediate areas. He's not going to change overnight. And then as far as the Seattle quarterback situation, it's tough because it's been so hard to evaluate. People, I hate doing this as like the straw man thing, but during the Monday game, or the last preseason game rather, you know, I think I tweeted something to the effect of like, I don't really know what to take away from this with Geno because he's missed a couple throws, but there's so many drops and lapses and protection and this and that and penalties, and it makes it really hard to evaluate him and have a true quarterback competition.
Does not having Russell Wilson in Seattle change how you're going to be watching this team? Are there other position groups you're watching more closely?
You know, I think, and I would say maybe this extends to other Seahawks fans generally, with a year like this, which is not quite a rebuild, I guess they're calling it a retool, I think priority number one is just hoping that you see development from the younger players, whether that's a Boye Mafe or Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, who have, of course, looked, penalties aside, very good in the preseason. You just want to see them continue to develop so that next year, and nobody has any delusions, I think, that this is a team that's going to make a deep playoff run, but you want to see the pieces in place so that next year, if they draft a quarterback or go after one in free agency, it feels like the foundation is set for, you know, the next, I guess, playoff team.
Mina, how do you watch these preseason games? I'm trying to tell people out here to don't focus on the score. Look at individual battles. Look at players who are performing. When you watch the Seahawks, do you take into account the score? Just give us an insight of how you watch these games and evaluate.
No, it's just what you said, where you're focusing on players and their development. And, you know, watching Seattle, there's things to be encouraged by. There's things to be frustrated by. I think I mentioned the two offensive tackles, aside from the false starts from Charles Cross, obviously, you know, really encouraging signs from both him and Abe Lucas at right tackle, both in pass protection and run blocking, which was, you know, Charles Cross coming from more of that air raid, spread him out offense, something I wanted to see. How does he look in both the pass and the run game? And so far, the early returns are really good. But on the flip side, on the other side of the ball, defensively, while I think, you know, Boye Mafe, who's their, you know, second-round pick this year, has definitely flashed some of that explosiveness and motor you saw in college, I don't think anyone would disagree with me. The tackling has been pretty lackluster. And so I think looking at some of these defensive players, the young corners, the young linebackers, you want to see improvement on that side of the ball.
Moving outside of Seattle, is there a team or two that you're especially eager to watch this season where you're like, look, obviously you have to watch 1,000,005 games for your job, but you are going to sharpie this into your planner. I am watching every single one of this team's games.
Well, I'm really, and this is, I guess, why I have a reputation as a traitor, I'm really keen on watching the San Francisco 49ers this year with Trey Lance as the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Just from a pure football nerd standpoint, I think everyone, you know, I've really wanted to see what does Kyle Shanahan do with a quarterback with a big arm and an incredible rushing ability, given that he's, you know, one of the most brilliant run game designers in the history of the sport. We only got to see glimpses of it last year, and you know, Trey Lance himself, having played so little football in college, is obviously still adjusting to the game. So, you know, just seeing a full season with him surrounded by, you know, what I think is really the best environment of any second-year quarterback, that's going to be really fascinating.
Mina, what are your thoughts on the AFC East, man? I look at that, look at Buffalo and Josh Allen, and Miami has all this potential. And then the weird offensive coordinator situation in New England. What do you think of the AFC East this year?
I think, like a lot of folks, the Bills are pretty clearly the favorite, just so complete on both sides of the ball, but most complete roster in the NFL, forget the division. And even just getting a little look at Josh Allen in the preseason, just making an absolutely absurd throw with ease, seems like they're just going to continue right where they left off, even with a new offensive coordinator and Ken Dorsey. And then behind them, I actually think, you know, I have the Jets pretty clear, comfortably in fourth, but between New England and Miami, I really think it could go either way. I know Miami's obviously made a lot of flashy signings and additions, but, I, you know, I still have some concerns about that offensive line. Defensively, they kind of brought back all the same players, but I think maybe they outkicked their coverage a little bit last year in terms of their performance. So I wouldn't write off the Patriots as a wild card team just yet.
I saw you tweeting about the Jags defensive line, which has also prompted me to wonder, is there a team that was just god awful last year where your expectations for them are much higher for this season, or rather the intrigue around them is much higher for this season?
You know, I don't think the Falcons are going to be good. I just want to be clear. But offensively, whether it's Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder, I actually think there's some potential for this offense to be fun to watch. Arthur Smith, head coach, seems to be just trying to rebuild what he had in Tennessee in terms of the physicality of the players. I mean, you just look at these skill players. It looks like a bunch of power forwards, between Kyle Pitts and Drake London. You bring in Auden Tate. I mean, there's just so much size there. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see, especially coupled with a mobile quarterback, regardless of who it is.
I mean, the last one I got for you, the situation over there in Green Bay, the wide receiver spot. Now, the thing about Tom Brady was he was always able to make something out of nothing with his receivers, right? Make them better. And I feel like this is year Aaron Rodgers has an opportunity to do that. Do you think there's enough over there and Aaron Rodgers is good enough to elevate this team and continue to have the success that he's had?
I think so. And I'll say it's less about the skill players and more. I thought that one of the biggest, there's two giant pieces of news this weekend. One, Aaron Stinney, the Bucs starting guard, going down just because that offensive line is so decimated. And the flip side, David Bakhtiari, the Packers left tackle, finally returning to the field is massive, massive news because, you know, we can worry about the skill players and whether youngsters like Christian Watson or Romeo Doubs can contribute right away. But for the most part, you know, this is an offense that at least at the outset is going to run through Allen Lazard, Robert Tonyan, and then those two backs, Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, both in the run and the passing game. So for me, like, the biggest question wasn't who's going to be catching the ball. It's whether Aaron Rodgers is going to have time. And if Bakhtiari is healthy, I think he'll be fine.
All right, Mina, I just wanted to wrap it up, not with an NFL question, but our Seattle Mariners, Mina, right in the thick of things with the wild card race. I know you're also a Mariners fan. How closely are you watching these games? / have you thought about the possibility that they might qualify for a wild card series while you're on air doing something?
You know, it's been a disappointing few days, but that's how high our expectations are right now for this team, right? it's one of those things where, you know, the Seahawks had to have a down year for the Mariners to finally have an up year. I don't know how that works exactly, but I'll tell you this. I'm going to, assuming if, knock on wood, Seattle makes it, I'm going to do everything in my power to get up to Seattle. I don't care about what's going on in football because, you know, guys, you know, it's historic.
Completely understandable. She is ESPN's Mina Kimes. Mina, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Mina.
Bye, guys.
All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Lofa Tatupu joining us in 20 minutes. Before then, taking a look at the timeline, Urban Meyer, he's got a new gig. We'll tell you where he landed next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. We need the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. Let's get it started in Baltimore. This one trending here. We are not going to take a look at the Ravens and NFL headlines. So instead, we're going to talk about this streak here. The Ravens have now won 22 straight preseason games, extending their NFL record. That streak, in case you were wondering how many years 22 games spans, dates back to the start of the 2016 preseason. Their last preseason loss was September 3rd, 2015 to Atlanta.
That's impressive.
2016.
It's impressive. You see how hard it is to get 90-something guys together to perform during the preseason. We're seeing it here in Seattle. For them to get it going for this many games, we talked to Justin Forsett last week. He was with the Baltimore Ravens when that streak started. And he said it's just the way they prep, the way they get guys going. I also want to say it's probably because of the offense as well, because they're not a spread them out, throw the football across the yard type of offense. They pack it in, they run the football. So there's less room for error. You just get the ball to your athletes and go. But I don't care what you're playing. You play anything and you win 22 times in a row. That's impressive.
It's incredibly impressive. I mean, consider that their last preseason loss was the preseason following the Seahawks Super Bowl loss.
Wow.
Think of it that way. 2015 preseason.
I'm pretty sure
the preseason
Lamar
following
Jackson,
Super Bowl 49.
I think Lamar Jackson either won the Heisman Trophy that year or it was like his senior season at Louisville.
Very, very strange, but very cool. All right. Well, speaking of the NFL, next up here on the timeline, Urban Meyer, former NFL head coach, failed NFL head coach, has a new gig back in the NFL, or rather back in college sports, kind of. He's been rehired as a studio analyst for Fox Sports' Big Noon kickoff show.
You know what? Big ups to John Clayton. Urban Meyer, he's always say his name like that. But Urban Meyer, here's the gift and the curse about the NFL and getting to that frat and even college football. Once you're in, you're in. And if you have success, you're going to get lots of opportunities to do things. But at some point, you got to distance yourself a little bit from people. Like, there's nothing great about Urban Meyer's resume other than his actual teams playing football.
You had top recruits, by the way.
Top recruits. But him as just a person is kind of like, okay, do you want to associate your brand with who Urban Meyer really is? Football mind, the greatest. One of the greatest. I've read his books. He understands the game. He lines players up, puts them in position. But at some point, man, give somebody else a chance. I'm sure there's some hungry young analyst who is qualified for the job, ready to go, and he missed out on an opportunity because you want to go with what you know and go with Urban Meyer. Again, football-wise, the dude knows what he's doing, but you want to associate him with your brand. It's kind of suspect.
All right, next up in the timeline, Tom Brady. And no, it is not once again revisiting the theory that he was filming The Masked Singer and that's why he was gone from practice. Instead, he's trending because he's back at practice today. A couple hours ago, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers welcomed him back to the field. NFL on ESPN tweeted a video of him throwing an hour ago. So he is back out there, and I have potentially horrible news. Dove Kleiman, who is an independent reporter but covers NFL stories, take this with a grain of salt. He is not with any publication, okay? So just know that this is another theory thrown into the mix. If I was going to report on a Redditor with a Masked Singer theory, we can report on another Twitter user. He says that his sources have that Tom Brady's absence was due to family commitments. It's Bump's theory. Bump had a theory that when Tom Brady retired, he and Giselle and the family planned a vacation. And when he unretired, Giselle was like, no, you're not. We're doing this vacation. Yeah. So according to Dolph Kleiman, they went on a family trip to the Bahamas.
Yeah. All right. That feels good. I mean, that seems right. Family first. He's got years in the game. Greatest quarterback of all time. He can do what he wants to do pretty much. But I bet you he looks good at practice. I bet you it's the same old Tom Brady.
You got to have an alibi if you're going to be on Masked
Singer. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. Mm. I'm not buying it yet. I think that it is very, very possible that this was leaked to Dov Kleiman by Brady's team. Just leaked to random people to throw them off the scent, throw them off the trail of the Masked Singer. Because the Masked Singer, where the filming dates line up perfectly, can't have this surprise ruined. I mean, they've got to go into post-production. You know what I mean? It's going to ruin the surprise.
How long do we have to wait? When is this?
Probably a couple months,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
Yeah. All right. I think that this
probably is long enough for the fall TV season. That seems to be when Masked Singer always is on TV.
This upcoming fall TV season?
Yeah.
I mean, so like September, November. That's not that long.
Yeah. I mean, they probably don't need to edit too much.
So I can just claim to be right until then, and then we'll figure it out.
You can claim to be right until then. I am still convinced until I see him not on it. I am convinced he was filming The Masked Singer.
I think that's fair.
I think that's more than fair.
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right, too. Next up in the timeline, last story of the timeline. Shout out to Bump, who mentioned this in Four Down Territory. Hooters is trending. Why does Hooters matter to the sports world? Because the restaurant chain has signed 51 offensive linemen to NIL deals. They said they want to sign entire offensive line groups rather than individual players. That's right, because it's a team sport. The school deals are with Auburn, LSU, Oklahoma, Miami, Georgia Tech, Missouri, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Florida Atlantic, and USF.
Where's the Pac-12, man? This type of stuff I'm talking about. Get involved in this, man. Pac-12, get in this mix. But thank you, Hooters, for taking care of the big boys, man. They protect the quarterback. They make running lanes for running backs. They don't get enough love. Thank you, Hooters, for doing this. Pac-12, where you at, though?
I want to make sure, Curtis, that we isolate the clip of saying, shout out to Hooters, and also I'm really happy with Hooters for doing this or whatever that Bump had earlier in the
show.
So
I'm feeling Hooters right now.
I'm feeling Hooters right now. Yeah,
we'll send that to his wife.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Chain Company, your friend in the jewelry business. All right, the Mariners have an off day today. They're back at it tomorrow with a series at home, the first of six games at home at T-Mobile. You have two against the Nationals, then you got four against Cleveland. Because there is no Mariners game tonight, and it is a Mariners off day, you can tune in from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for extra innings hosted by Curtis Rogers. All baseball for
two hours.
Curtis, are you sure you're ready for this? Are you ready for more baseball?
I mean, look, I'm contractually obligated to be more ready for more baseball. So I will be more ready for baseball.
All right, well, we are going to get back to the Mariners in about an hour when Jason Churchill joins us. First, we're going to talk Seahawks and NFL with Lofa Tatupu. He joins us next.